from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest, Patriots beat writer from the Boston Globe, Jim McBride. There's a lot to talk about with Jim, including news that broke on the first day of free agency in the legal tampering period. The Patriots make a big splash signing tight end Jonnu Smith to a four-year, $50 million deal. That means that Cam Newton, who's also back, will have more weapons next year. But does that mean he'll be better next year? We talk about Cam, the sequel, with Jim. Also, there's a sleeper quarterback prospect in this year's NFL draft that Jim thinks is a great fit for the Patriots. Jim also tells us what it was like to be the only Patriots beat reporter traveling last season during the pandemic. Also, he was on the vanguard of pandemic travel. Ellen, I can't imagine that, like sitting on empty planes or just being in these airports when it looks like it's something out of World War Z or some other terrible movie where the world has just completely disintegrated. I wouldn't have been able to do the travel, but it seems like Jim was pretty okay with it.
No, I was... I mean, you know me. I just went out to eat for like the first time in basically a year this past weekend, and I didn't like it. So like I have PTSD from this whole experience. So I only imagine that maybe someone who went through it and lived a normal life throughout COVID as much as possible is like handling this better than the rest of the world.
It's possible. Yeah.
But I mean, who knows? But he also talks about how Cam Newton may be doing better with fans in the stands next season.
He did say that, yes.
Do you think that's the case? Do you think he can be that much better just with fans in the stands?
No, I don't. And Jim also mentioned some mechanical tweaks. But honestly, I'm not on board with bringing Cam back as a placeholder quarterback. I think you look at the way he performed last year. He played 15 games, Ellen, and in more than a quarter of them, four, he threw for under 100 yards passing. Like, that's hard to do in today's modern NFL.
I think this is like why regular people like me and you, just the mere peasants of the world, like hate athletes, because he stunk so bad, and he's getting a $13 million raise. Like, I know that isn't entirely guaranteed. He's betting on himself for the bonuses there.
He's really only getting like $3.5 million.
Okay, so he's getting a $2.5 million raise from last season.
Yeah.
Okay, like, most of us didn't get a raise this year. Most of us lost our jobs this year. Like, I'm just sick of it.
No, I just, look, that's the interesting thing I think about. I know what you're saying. Normally, sports is a very performance-oriented business.
Yes.
And particularly with the Patriots. And that's the weird thing about this with Bill Belichick. Like, he really should be pushing away from the table and cutting bait with Cam Newton. And it feels like he's doubling down instead.
Well, yeah, it seems like Bill Belichick's hubris is possibly taking over in this decision.
Yeah, there's no question about it. It's like this is a relationship that he's just not willing to let go. And he doesn't want to put Cam in the friend zone. He's just decided that, look, Cam's his guy, and whether they're a fit or not as a football marriage, they're just going to plow ahead.
No, this is like when you're in a relationship with someone who you just know it's not going to work out, but you're going to keep dating him to prove to your family, like, we're going to work out.
Yeah, that is very much sort of what this is like. Although I will say, I do think the Patriots are exploring other options at quarterback. I don't think they're putting all their eggs in the Cam Newton basket. So it's like that relationship you talked about, but that person's also on, say, Tinder or Bumble or whatever, looking around for a better option.
Yeah, well, you always got to have plan B. You never know.
Do you? Well, that's interesting. All right. Somebody just got put on notice there.
I'm kidding. Oh,
so she says. All right. So we'll have Jim McBride on NFL free agency and what is a pivotal offseason for the Patriots and Bill Belichick. That's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5 on Boston's news leader.
All right, as promised, we're now joined by Jim McBride, Patriots beat writer for the Boston Globe and someone I've known for a long time. He edited my terrible copy way back when I was writing high schools. So Jim certainly has moved up in the world. Jim, how are you today?
I'm good. And don't beat yourself over that. You were always a great writer.
Oh, well, I don't know about that, but you've saved me many a time. We can get into that too, including Super Bowl 42. Many a time Jim saved me when he was on the copy desk. And now obviously he's the excellent beat writer for the Patriots. So I want to start here. Obviously a big offseason for the Patriots, and you've broken all the biggest stories so far this offseason, starting with the Cam Newton returning story. So talk to me about that. Why do you think the Patriots made the decision to bring him back after what was, I think, by all accounts, a real struggle last year for Cam?
Yeah, I think they wanted to have, you know, a plan in place for when today starts, free agency. I think they when they're making their pitch to potential guys, they wanted to say, hey, look, Cam's here. We've got a guy in place. We're not done shopping. We're certainly going to be looking at for guys through trades. I wouldn't be surprised if another free agent quarterback signs, and certainly through the draft. I don't think at 15 they're in play for one of the top five guys that I think everyone's kind of, the Trevor Lawrence or Zach Wilson or even Mac Jones. But, I think they wanted to have a guy in place. And I think Cam still has some cachet around the league that guys will want to play with him. And, Chris, as you know from being around the Patriots and Coach Belichick for so long, he always talks about that second-year bump that the rookies get. I think that's what you're going to see with Cam this year in the Patriots system. Obviously he's not a rookie, but he's going to have that second year in the program, in a full off-season program, a full training camp. And I just think you're going to see a much better Cam this year. And I think that's why they wanted to get it done. And if you remember, after the Jets game, the season finale last year, Cam said one of his big regrets was waiting so long to sign. He didn't sign with the Patriots to July 1st, and he vowed that he wasn't going to do that again. So maybe he had an inkling or feeling of what the market was going to be like, and felt like the Patriots were probably his best shot to kind of regain his form. And that's why they wanted to get it done early.
That's really interesting. I mean, I think, what I want to know from you about the Cam decision, you're right, it did catch some people by surprise. Is this a decision that, Bill Belichick sort of broke down the tape and came to? Because it sounded like Bill was, certainly open to him coming back even after that regular season finale against the Jets. Is this something where they went back, looked at the tape, broke it down and said, yep, we think there's more there with Cam? Or was this always sort of something on Bill's radar? Even at the end of last season, he just sort of made up his mind, I'm not going to eliminate Cam Newton as a potential quarterback for us for 2021.
Yeah, I think it was always a possibility. I think you remember at the end of last year, I think it was again during that Jets game, that the reports came out that they were going to part ways, amicably. They were both going to go in different directions. And Bill kind of bristled at that suggestion during his post-game press conference that day. So I think right then, to me, the seeds were kind of planted that this relationship might not be over as quick as a lot of people thought it was. And then, Cam's subsequent comments recently about, he was asked by Brandon Marshall on his podcast if he'd come back, and he said, hell yeah. So there was another hint that he might come back. And then even Jed Fish, the Arizona coach who was Cam's quarterbacks coach for most of last year, said last week that he thought the best fit was him coming back to New England. So, you start to put those pieces together and you think, yeah, now this really makes sense. But I think the door was never really shut the way some people thought it was.
Yeah, it would appear that way. And I think why some people are a little surprised is that when you look at the season that Cam had, I mean, the Patriots were last in the NFL in touchdown passes with 12, and Cam threw 8 of those. 2 came from Jarrett Stidham, 2 came from Jacoby Myers, but also 6 of the 7 lowest passing yardage games of Cam Newton's career came last year, and the only 4 times in his career he was under 100 yards passing came last year. So obviously there were issues. COVID opt-outs, he had COVID, he signed late, all the things that you mentioned. But what we've sort of been led to believe about the Patriots for 2 decades is that they are a performance-based culture. You either get it done or you don't. Cam Newton did not get it done. So when I look at that, I think that's why people are surprised. And I guess my question essentially boils down to, Bill's known as being someone who's sort of unsentimental and takes out sort of emotions when he makes decisions. But is there an emotional component here to bringing Cam back?
Yeah, I think so. I know a lot of people like to have that common belief that Bill's kind of machine-like and that emotions don't enter into it. But we've seen in the past that he has, some sentimentality when it comes to certain players. You listen to him talk about some of the old Giants guys, Mark Bavaro, those type of players, Lawrence Taylor for sure. But yeah, I think so. And I think that a lot of people didn't buy into to Bill's praise of Cam last year. I think that a lot of people thought, well, you know, we just lost Brady, so he's got to hype this guy up. But I think it was genuine. I think he really loved the way, you know, Cam came in and was basically replacing the most decorated guy, not only in franchise history, but probably in league history. And he didn't shy away from that. He embraced that leadership role almost from the get-go. You know, the COVID protocols didn't allow like the locker room bonding that you normally would see, but Cam was still able to overcome that and make, you know, great friendships and connections with all his teammates, dropping those nicknames that he had for guys. So, you know, I really think that Bill, you know, admired the way he came in and took control of this team. You know, I think that first week of training camp, it was a pretty even battle. And then Cam kind of showed his superiority and, you know, it became evident that he was going to be the starter. So I think that, you know, Bill loved that personality he had and wants to give him a full year in this program to see, you know, what can happen. And I think that the thing I'm looking forward to seeing is Cam's mechanics and see how much they've improved. If his shoulder is just that much better 2 years removed from surgery than it was last year, because I think a lot of times his awkwardness of his throws were mechanic. You know, they weren't always, hey, he made the wrong read or he couldn't pick up his secondary receiver. I think he physically had trouble making those throws. His feet weren't set. They were often parallel to the line of scrimmage rather than driving the ball with his front foot. I think you'll see more of that. And it's funny, I didn't really notice it at the time, but I think his mechanics really fell off after his bout with COVID, even though he denied that he had any lingering symptoms or anything. But I think, you know, that time away, that practice time away and that week away, it was tough to overcome, and he never really did.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I would say, and I said this from the jump last year, Jim, I don't care who the quarterback was last year, with the weapons around him, it was going to be a heavy lift. I do want to talk about Cam because we're talking about him a lot, obviously, as sort of like the presumptive starter. But, you know, what I've heard over there is, look, they like having him back. He provides stability and he provides insurance for them. And he's a known quantity in their mind. But no one over there thinks he's the long term solution. And they're still going to be scouring the market for another quarterback. I know you mentioned that. So who do you think is top of their list? And what do you think is most likely in terms of adding another quarterback? Is it a trade for someone like Jimmy Garoppolo? Is it free agency where you bring in somebody like maybe Ryan Fitzpatrick or Mitchell Trubisky? Or is it the draft where either you move up for a Trey Lance or Mac Jones falls you, or maybe you take a guy like a Kellen Mond in the third round instead? What do you think is most likely there at quarterback?
Boy, I love all those names. I'm not going to lie. There's okay. A lot of names that intrigue me, but I'm going to throw another one out there, Okay. Kind of a back to the future. How about Jacoby Brissett? This is a guy that I know the Patriots organization, they loved him, but he was buried on the depth chart when he was here. He had Tom and Jimmy ahead of him. And so when they traded him to the Colts for Dorsett, I don't think it was an indictment on whether they thought he could play. They just knew he couldn't play there because it was just the guys were in front of him that so he couldn't get in. I mean, when he came in after Garoppolo got hurt and led the Patriots to a victory, you know, basically after breaking his thumb, I think it was Vince Wilfork that fell on his thumb in that game.
Yeah.
And the Patriots still were able to beat the Texans. They loved his toughness and his guts. So I could see a reunion there. And maybe Jacoby and Cam work together as kind of a, you know, a bridge to Jacoby being the full-time starter in the future. I'm probably the only guy that thinks that. But
I was going to say, I understand certainly he's familiar with the system. I guess I just look at Jacoby as another sort of middle-of-the-road placeholder quarterback, and I'd say, could he be the long-term guy? Like, if Garoppolo comes back, Garoppolo's my number one choice, Jim. I think that Bill obviously believed in him very much. He wanted to move forward with him before the timeline didn't line up with Tom Brady. Garoppolo's gone to a Super Bowl with another coach, Kyle Shanahan, who's a very good coach, but he's not Bill Belichick. So I think Jimmy is proven enough that he could be an upgrade and be your franchise quarterback, but still young enough that he could be your guy for another 8 to 10 years. You know, the issue I think is San Francisco, you know, they have to get someone they feel like is an upgrade before they move on from Jimmy Garoppolo. And I look at it and say, even if they get a Sam Darnold, if I'm them, Darnold doesn't make a ton of money. I'll hold on to Jimmy. And if it becomes like a Marcus Mariota, Ryan Tannehill thing in Tennessee, where Darnold beats out Jimmy, well, then I'll trade him during the season, but I'm not going to just give him away.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm just wondering, with Kyle Shanahan loves his quarterback so much, is he going to want to give up a guy that helped him get to a Super Bowl, even though they didn't win, unless he's got another guy in place already, like a Kirk Cousins, like a Matt Ryan. Yep. Like, a lot of dominoes would have to fall. But, you know, I know a lot of people have projected Jimmy back to the Patriots, and I would love to see that too, because I think he was clearly the guy they had anointed as the heir apparent to Tom. And he just didn't get that chance because, you know, Tom's, you know, not going anywhere. he might be playing till 55. But, yeah, I just think that Kyle's not going to let him go until he's got a firm plan in place. You know, and people, I've heard people bring up Sam Darnold before, too. And, you know, I think Garoppolo, at this stage of his career, Kyle would probably rather work with him than Darnold.
Yeah, I mean, if he can stay healthy, you know, that's where obviously the caveat for Jimmy. So a lot about the quarterback. I think that's obviously the number one source of intrigue for the Patriots this offseason. But again, as we mentioned, no matter who the quarterback is, they need to upgrade the weapons. It was a struggle for the Patriots. They got one touchdown catch from a tight end last year. That was in the last game with Devin Asiasi. They were at the bottom of the NFL in all the categories for wide receivers. They have more than $60 million in cap space. Put your Bill Belichick cap on, Jim. Where do you think they're going to try and upgrade this offense and upgrade these weapons?
Yeah, I think, you know, receiver and tight end, clearly, you know, they've already kind of addressed the offensive line with getting Trent Brown. I think, you know, probably the number one guy they need back on the offensive line is David Andrews. I know he's not a skilled player on offense, but I think, you know, they can try to get him in place. That helps a lot. But they've got to go after a couple of receivers. I think Adam Humphries, who the Titans just cut, you know, he'd be an even better buy because he wouldn't figure into the compensation, you know, the compensatory pick formula. So there's a guy that could come in here. And Patriots had a lot of interest in him a couple of years ago, and were kind of, you know, the Titans got him, even though the Patriots reportedly had offered him more money. He had already committed to the Titans. So there's another guy. Like, I'll tell you, I'm showing my Notre Dame bias here and say Will Fuller, but the thing with Will is that his legs are kind of, they're so fragile. Like, it seems like he pulls a hammy almost every year and takes him a long time to get back. But, you know, he's a guy I do really like. Nelson Agholor, there's a guy kind of under the radar, a guy that I think would fit in here really well.
I like Nelson Agholor, Jim. You know, I liked him coming out of USC. I know the Patriots did. They did a lot of work on him the year he came out and he went to Philly. Yeah. And I think a lot of Patriots fans obviously remember the way that he played in Super Bowl 52 for the Eagles. And the knock on him is sort of, he's an inconsistent catcher. And people said, oh, you know, he's not a guy that generates big plays. But he did. He averaged more than 18 yards a catch once he got to the Raiders. I like that fit for the Patriots.
Yeah, I do too. I do too, very much. And, you know, let me ask you about a guy that I think, you know, maybe fits into the mix here a little bit is Curtis Samuel, a guy who can play, you know, both receiver and running back, kind of a guy that would seemingly fit the Patriots mold. And I know that's kind of cliche to say, because a lot of players, they'll say, oh, he's a typical Patriot. He's a Patriot. But I think he really is. I mean, this guy had 70 plus catches last year. He rushed for over 200 yards. He's only 24 years old. You know, I'm sure the Panthers would probably love to hang on to him, but I think he's kind of a guy that Josh McDaniels would love to get his hands on and get the ball in his hands.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things with the Patriots, and it's what they did so early on in the dynasty, is identifying guys who had more room for growth. I mean, obviously, you know, it's great. You can say, oh, I want Kenny Golladay, you know, top of the market, going to pay more than $20 million. But if you can get a guy who maybe has some more room to grow as a player and as a receiver, whether that's a Keelan Cole or, you know, Curtis Samuel, if you can get somebody like that, you can get him for less money. And also, if you give him like the right role, I mean, I go back to Wes Welker, you know, technically that was a trade, but they identified him in free agency. He was a restricted free agent, and then it ended up being a trade because they had a poison pill in the contract, and the NFL didn't like that. So they said, hey, Miami Patriots, figure this out. But that was a great job of Belichick identifying somebody who could be greater in his system than he was in another team's system. And I think if they can get back to that, you know, that would really help. I think we all know the trials and tribulations they've had drafting wide receivers. For whatever reason, it hasn't worked. Bill's talked about it in the past, that the challenge sort of trying to project guys from the college game to the pro game, it's so different what they're asked to do. They're not asked to do a lot of sight recognition on their routes. Even the hash marks are different. The Patriots have just struggled there. They just have. I think it's a little safer and a little easier to project a guy. At least you know guy X, Jim, can play in the NFL. And now it's just about, can he play in your system? Whereas projecting the college guys, it's a twofold projection. One, can this guy play receiver in the NFL at a high level for anyone? And two, can he do it in our system?
Yeah, and it's a difficult system to learn. You know, there's no doubt about it. You talk to, you know, every receiver along the line, and they all say that the Patriots playbook is so tough to, you know, to handle, and to ask a rookie to come in and make an impact, you know, is tough. And even, you know, even veterans have come in and, you know, they haven't been able to grasp that playbook the way they had in other places. So I think it takes a special person and a special player to come in and make their impact in this offense as a receiver.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree with you on that. You know, the good news for the Patriots is that this group of free agent wide receivers is pretty deep. I'm going to throw another name out there. And there are some big names that honestly I'm not that interested in. Like, I think AJ Green's sort of over the hill. You know, he's had a great career, but he's on the downside. I feel the same way about T.Y. Hilton. He was a guy that the Patriots had so much respect for. They basically would, a lot of times in playoff games against the Colts, they would treat him almost like a gunner on special teams, you know, basically put two guys on him and treat him that way. But again, I think his best days are behind him. What about somebody like Juju Smith-Schuster coming out of Pittsburgh? You know, I like him. He maybe hasn't quite taken the mantle from Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh the way people thought, but people forget how young he is as a player. And I think there's a guy that would be a good fit in this system.
Yeah. And a guy that, you know, made them forget about Antonio for at least a year, but I didn't like the way he kind of shrunk a little last year with the emergence of Chase Claypool. Kind of looked at him as kind of the new number one instead of challenging him. He was the guy that was established in place. I'm not sure if he's a great fit in New England just because of his gigantic social media personality, and that doesn't always bode well in New England.
But people kind of said the same thing about Cam, remember?
That's true. That's true. And he made it, you know, kind of work, I guess. But yeah, I think Juju could, you know, it could probably play anywhere, but I would like to see him flex himself more as the alpha dog than kind of a secondary guy, because he clearly has that talent.
Yeah, I mean, and I think he'd have the opportunity to do that here. He's a guy that can, I know his yards per catch were down last year, but he's a guy that can sort of do it inside or outside, which the Patriots like in their receivers. They like some versatility. They like that. So, I mean, he's another guy that sort of comes to mind that could do it. I think there's also like buy low options. And I know Bill always keeps an eye on guys who've done well against them in the past. Let me throw another name at you, because I remember this guy lit them up his rookie year in a preseason game. Granted, he was lighting up Jordan Richards and Cyrus Jones, but he also did it in a regular season game. Keelan Cole of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah, maybe one of the best catches I've ever seen live was against the Patriots a couple years ago in Jacksonville. He made a sideline catch that I still see that replay every once in a while. I wonder how he came up with that ball. But yeah, that's a guy that's, you know, could definitely fit in this system. Has a flair for the dramatic, really athletic, really sneaky fast. I wonder if Urban really, you know, would love to keep him, you know, as one of, you know, Trevor Lawrence's safety blankets down in Jacksonville. But I like that guy a lot. He's a real good player. And, you know, going back to the Smith-Schuster thing, the Pittsburgh Steelers have done an unbelievable job of drafting receivers.
They have.
For, what are we going, 15 years back maybe?
I mean, go back to Hines Ward.
Yeah, I don't know who is in charge of their scouting department or you know, their receiving scout, but man, that guy does a really good job at identifying guys that are going to excel in the NFL.
Yeah, there's no question about that. No question about that. Let me tie the two things we've talked about together here. Obviously, we're talking about all these players and NFL free agency, and the Patriots, again, they have a copious cap space. I mean, it's really a ton of cap space at this point. The latest projection from Over the Cap has them with more than $69 million in cap space. Now, I don't think that's factoring in the Trent Brown deal, but we'll go with it. So right now, at the start of this legal tampering period, which opened Monday at noon, the Patriots had the second most cap space in the NFL, $69 million. Only the Jaguars had more, and the Jaguars are a terrible team. The Patriots are a middle-of-the-pack team at this point. So tying these two things together, Jim, do you think Cam Newton still has the cachet to attract players here? Because I go back to this. and this is a little rough, but I'm just going to say it. Like, Cam had a camper at his own football camp basically call him out for sucking last year. And I know that guys respect Cam, and he has that swag, and it's great. He sits down, and he does these podcasts with Odell Beckham Jr. and all this other stuff. Guys like him. But now you're talking something different because you're talking about business and their money. And I think a lot of these guys look at it and say, look, you're never going to get your whole free agent contract anyway. You might be back out on the market in 2 years or 3 years when the team decides to move on or asks you to take a haircut or restructure. You need to be able to point to your stats to get the next contract. And if Cam's going to play the way he played last year, you might not get those stats. So do you think he's still an attraction?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, he's going to have to sell himself a little bit more, kind of the way that he sold himself to us, that this second year is going to be different. You know, it's a full year in the system. He's going to be, you know, better physically because of, you know, he's just that much farther removed from surgery, not only on the foot, but on his shoulder. And, you know, another thing that works in the Patriots' favor here is that not a lot of teams have the cap money. So say marquee receiver A might receive in a normal year 6 to 7 teams, you know, buying for his services. Well, there might be one or two this year. So that helps the Patriots because there's just that much less money out there for guys. So I think that, you know, Cam can be a salesman and, you know, he's a businessman as well. So I think that, you know, he'll sell himself and he'll be able to sell the fact that he's going to be better physically and mentally in this system this year. I think that, you know, a lot of the kind of the missed assignments and missed calls, he's not going to make those mistakes again.
Jim, I think something you just said there is spot on where it's Cam Newton is a salesperson at the end of the day. He not only, I mean, he sold himself to the Patriots and he just straight up stunk last year. And so I want to know, as the only reporter who is following the Patriots on their road games, you were able to witness the lack of fans, the lack of energy in the stadium. And Cam Newton recently said how he thinks fans will help him in his next season, especially New England Patriot fans. Now, do you think that was a little bit of an excuse, or do you think that the fan energy is a real thing that could help him?
Yeah, no, I think that was a genuine feeling on his part. Like, he really missed that, you know, that emotion. He's a very emotional guy, as we've seen, you know, and you know, you could see, I've seen his games in Carolina a couple of times, and he would feed off that crowd and vice versa. So to have him play in a place like Foxborough with a full stadium, knock on wood, I hope that's what we get in, you know, in September. I think it will make a difference. I don't think it was hyperbole from Cam. I think he really believes that he needs that energy, you know, and a lot of players have talked about that, but especially your quarterback. If he's feeding off that energy, it's just going to make things better. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing that as well as he is.
So what was it like for you reporting on these games with no fans in the stands?
It was very strange. It was like watching a silent movie. You know, this game was happening in front of me and there was no noises. There was no noises in the press box because there was so fewer people there. There were a couple of games this year where I remember the Chargers game. It was a Sunday in LA and the Patriots really laid a beating on the Chargers, but there were no press box announcements. And there wasn't another reporter around me for probably 50 yards. And I just felt like I was home in my basement watching this game. And it was very, very strange. So, I missed that energy as well, because that kind of gets us going. You know, Chris will tell you, like, when you hear the crowd and sometimes you feel like the stadium shaking, I mean, that's real football. So it was missed.
What was it like, Jim? You know, you were the only beat reporter, as far as I know, who traveled to the road games during the COVID year. So what was that like? Because I know, you know, when we work together at the Globe, there's sort of a camaraderie. You know, maybe you grab a beer or, you know, whatever with the other reporters, and there's talk in the press box, and, you know, there's stuff that sort of goes on there. What was it like traveling away from your family by yourself on the road and being in the press box, like you said, with maybe the next reporter's 50 yards away from you, and it's someone you might not know that well because they work for the home team?
Yeah, it was lonely. I'm not gonna lie. You know, one of the things, and Chris, I'm sure you'll know this and relate to this, when you travel for Patriots games, 90% of the time, you know, most of the people on the plane are Patriots fans and they're very loud and they're, you know, this is their one big trip. There was none of that this year. Most every flight I took, not only did I get a row to myself, like the row across from me would be empty as well. Like, I could have I could have set up a whole apartment building in some of the sections of the plane. It was very strange. And, you know, no camaraderie, like you say, like there was no going out to dinner after a game. You were getting takeout or, you know, room service if you were lucky enough. I mean, I remember being in LA for a week because the Patriots played there both times. And like my big outing that week, aside from the games, was getting to go to a practice at UCLA and watching like 15 minutes of the Patriots practice there. And that was like my big highlight, was getting to go to a 15-minute Patriot practice. So not exactly the ideal travel year, even though this was a year that a lot of people were looking forward to with, you know, with three West Coast trips.
Yes.
And, it was unfortunate. Yeah. Wow. I mean, I consider myself lucky to be on site, but I wish I had my colleagues and coworkers there with me.
What did you gain? You know, this year was different, obviously, with no locker room access. So what did you feel like you gained from being on site for those road games? Because obviously, you know, it's financial and there's a health and safety component as well. But I think a lot of organizations made the decision, news organizations, I mean, made the decision, okay, we're, you know, we're not going to go to these games. So what did you feel like you gained from going there?
Well, just mainly a lot of the pregame stuff that most of the people like to tweet about, you know, like, you know, reporters usually get their hours before the game starts and we'll tweet out every little thing that happens. And I was really the only person doing that this year. So it was kind of crazy. I remember at Giant Stadium, I tweeted out that Jake Bailey had taken some practice field goals. And it was the first time we had seen him kicking field goals, you know, during, and I tweeted out a video of it. I must have got 2,000 retweets of that simple video in like a half an hour. And I thought, wow, if this was a normal year, like this would be no big deal, because, you know, 15 of us would have tweeted that same thing out and it wouldn't have made an impact. But I think the pregame was probably where we benefited most. And, you know, I think people respected the fact that we were there. So I was glad for it.
Yeah, I mean, the Globe, obviously the paper of record, no question about that. And I also want to ask you, as we stay on this, just, I mean, what was it like traveling during that time? Because just in general, there were not a lot of people traveling for business. So what was it like in the airport or on the plane? You mentioned having entire rows to yourself, but what was it like being sort of one of the early COVID travelers?
Yeah, the airports were like ghost towns. Like, you know, you normally, my routine would be to, when I'm coming home from a trip, would get to the airport early and get something to eat, you know, then get on the plane. But the restaurants weren't open. So you were lucky if you found like a Hudson newsstand somewhere and you grabbed a bag of peanuts or cashews or something for the plane ride, because it was so dead, you know, going through security, it would take like a minute and a half maximum, where sometimes it would take you, you know, a half an hour to get through security. It was really lonely. You got a lot of attention from the flight attendants because they had so fewer customers, like they were constantly coming around and seeing if you needed anything, even though, you know, there were no meals on the planes, but, you know, you were getting offered bottles of water because I think they were bored.
Switching it back to football, and obviously this is a very important offseason for the Patriots. You know, after they missed the playoffs for the first time since the 2008 season, a first losing season for them since 2000. So a lot of focus, again, obviously on that quarterback position. I know you went to the Senior Bowl in Mobile, and that was a little different, obviously, this year as well. But you're so plugged in with the Patriots. If you had to guess, in terms of the draft, what they end up doing, or if they end up doing something at quarterback, you know, out of the big five quarterbacks, Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, Trey Lance, you know, who do you think they like? And I know obviously Trevor Lawrence isn't going to be there for them. And then give me maybe a secondary quarterback that you think they could take that would maybe be a guy after the first or second round.
So I think probably Mac Jones is a guy that kind of fits their mold, very accurate passer, maybe not the most athletic guy, but certainly can buy a little time in the pocket. You know, I know people have pointed to the fact that he just had a bevy of great receivers down in Alabama.
I'm one of those people.
Yeah. But, you know, for a lot of his senior year or this past year, he only really had Devonta Smith because Waddle was hurt early. Now, granted, he had Najee Harris, too.
He did. So that's a John Michie the third, like, stepped up and had almost 1,000 yards receiving.
Yeah. So, you know, he did benefit from that clearly. And he also had, you know, a tremendous offensive line. So he wasn't like he was under pressure a lot, but I did like his footwork in the Senior Bowl until he twisted his ankle maybe in the last day of practice. And I was actually fortunate that day too, because, or not fortunate for him, but fortunate for me, because it would happen to be a play I was recording when I couldn't really tell if he got stepped on or someone stepped on him, but he came up limping, and that was kind of the end of his Senior Bowl week. But he had shown enough during those three practices that he was clearly a very good player. He was hitting guys that week that he hadn't worked with at all. So I think that answered some of the questions of, hey, can we stick this guy in with a bunch of receivers that aren't, you know, five-star guys like he's so used to working with? And he excelled. So, you know, and I know a lot of people will make a lot about the relationship between Bill and Nick Saban, and that's clearly a really tight relationship. But, you know, I think Nick's not withholding information from other coaches who want to know about Mac Jones.
It's true.
So sometimes I think that's a little overblown, but I think what separates is that Bill knows the questions to ask, maybe more so than a lot of other, you know, scouts or coaches ask when they meet with Nick. So I think Mac Jones of that top five would be a really probably the best fit. I don't think he's going to slip past number eight because I think that the you know, Matt Rhule and the Carolina coaching staff that got to work with him all week, I think they really liked him. So, and they're looking for a quarterback. So I think that if he's, you know, if they stay put at eight and Mac Jones is still there, I could see him going there. Kind of a guy later rounds maybe that I liked was Kellen Mond that you had mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I really like him, Jim. Yeah, what did you see from him at the Senior Bowl?
A slow start. Like the first practice, he looked really rusty. He was sailing balls over guys' heads. But by the late in the first day and on the second and third day, I thought he improved greatly, kind of settled down. And this is a kid that's played in a lot of big games. Texas A&M, he played for Jimbo Fisher. It's not like he's unknown. He's just not maybe in that top five quality. But I think that he's a kid that can make all the throws. I got to watch him down at Brandon Marshall's scouting combine last week in Fort Lauderdale. He was there, and I got to sit down with him for a while and talk with him. And really smart kid, perceptive. And then when he started throwing on Friday, I believe it was, really showed that he could make all the throws. And, you know, he worked closely with Hugh Jackson, the old Cleveland Browns coach.
Yeah, yep.
Kind of the receivers quarterback coach at that mini combine. And he just talked glowingly about him. And I remember talking to Brandon Marshall about him. I said, tell me about Kellen Mond. And his eyes got so big. He was like, this is a dude. This guy's a dude that not a lot of people are talking about. But they think he's going to be the steal of the draft.
Yeah, a lot. I like him too, Jim. And I feel like if there's a Dak Prescott in this draft, you know, Dak just got the big contract, $40 million a year from the Cowboys. You know, Dak was a fourth round pick. I think if there's a guy that goes after the first two rounds that is that type of guy, I do think it's Kellen Mond. And he comes from a pro style offense with Jimbo Fisher. You know, Jimbo has a lot of verbiage in his offense. I know this as a Florida State fan. He coached Jameis Winston. There's a lot of responsibility on the quarterback at the college level. It's not one of these, hey, everybody turn to the sideline and look at this cue card that's SpongeBob and a banana and a picture of a Band-Aid and we all know what the play is. Like, you have to call out the verbiage and you will huddle and stuff. The other thing about Kellen Mond is, and I'm not saying he had the college career of Mac Jones or he's as good because Mac Jones is more accurate, but he's sort of, in a lot of ways, the antithesis of Mac Jones in that Kellen Mond never worked with a 1,000-yard receiver at Texas A&M. You know, he didn't have Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy and Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and, you know, Johnny Michi III and Jaleel Billingsley and Najee Harris and all these guys. He didn't have that around him, and his numbers still got better every single year at A&M. So that's a guy that I like as well, and that's really cool that you got to see him up close and personal both at the Senior Bowl and at this Brandon Marshall sort of pseudo combine in Florida.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, he looks, I think he's measured at like 6'3", but he just appears bigger. And he's kind of a wide guy too, like big wide shoulders. You know, I love the way he dropped back and set up. I love the way he could move. You know, he might not be, you know, your prototypical dual threat quarterback, but he's got the legs. He can make plays and buy extra time. So I think he's an intriguing prospect. I really do. And I think that he'd be able to fit in to the Patriots. Like you said, with Jimbo Fisher, it's not like he was running a Pop Warner offense down in College Station. You know, there's some complicated things, and that could bode well. Like, he could take that Patriots playbook, and I think he could devour it.
Yeah, all right. Jim's on team Kellen Mond as well. I like it. Where do you think
for a story coming up soon in the Boston Globe?
I was going to say, yeah, when is that? I know you've had a lot of stories. When's that Kellen Mond one coming out?
In recent days, you know, some breaking news has pushed things back a few days.
And speaking of breaking news, I do want to ask you this. What about the, you know, bringing Trent Brown back? Why do you think that was appealing to the Patriots? And, you know, I have some sources with that Raiders team who basically feel like, you know, Trent got his money and then dogged it. And they're they expressed some concern to me that without Dante Scarnecchia being here with the Patriots, that even on the 1 year deal, Trent could be difficult to reach, shall we say, for the Patriots. So what do you think was so appealing for Bill Belichick in terms of bringing Trent Brown back? And what does that mean for the rest of the offensive line?
Well, I think you, as you know, Chris, Dante Scarnecchia never really leaves. You know, he might be retired, he's never too far away. So I think if they need to call on him, and clearly Trent Brown thrived under that tough love coaching approach of Dante. But, you know, I think Popovich and Brasillo, the guys that took over him, they run a lot of the same principles as Dante. And I think they, you know, they might not have that commanding presence that Dante had, you know, this kind of grandfatherly guy who could really bark and get in your face and motivate
Dante,
you.
The Marine and Dante never left.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, you'd see him working with Trent Brown, and there's, you know, 6'8" Trent Brown, and you know what, Dante looked like he was 4'8" standing next to him, but you know, he could motivate him. But I think they really loved the way he played in his 1 year here, and I think by signing him, it opens up a world of possibilities. Now, I know that the lines of communication with Joe Tooney are still open, but you know, if he does leave, which my feeling is he probably will, because someone's going to open the checkbook big time for him. But then you have the option of playing Trent Brown at left tackle and moving Isaiah Wynn to left guard. And then, you know, right tackle, Marcus Cannon's obviously gone now, but Michael Wenu can take over at right tackle. So if Joe Tooney stays, then maybe Trent Brown plays right tackle and everyone else stays where they are. It gave them depth, it gave them possibilities, and it gave them, you know, a chance to bring back a guy who clearly loved playing here. And I think they're hoping that he continues to have that love. And where it's a one-year deal, that's a motivator in itself.
That's what they're hoping. And you mentioned Joe Tooney there. He's probably the most prominent Patriots free agent. I think you may have answered this before, but out of all their free agents, you know, who's the most important guy to bring back? You mentioned David Andrews. Dietrich Wise is one. I'll give you my vote. Lawrence Guy. Because the run defense was not good this year. It was some of the worst run defense of the Bill Belichick era, and I think Lawrence is just so reliable. They need to upgrade even if they get Lawrence, but man, if he's gone, yikes. I don't know how the interior of that line is going to look.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think Lawrence Guy has been an amazing player for them. For a guy who kind of signed under the radar a few years back, he's gotten better every year, not only as a player, but as a leader in that locker room. And I remember Dante Hightower telling me in 2019 that the thing he loved most about Lawrence is that he never did the wrong thing, and he was always in the right place. And that's been true. And he was clearly their best defensive lineman the last 2 years. And that's not taking away from anyone that's on that line, but Lawrence Guy was great, and I think they need – he's like the David Andrews on defense. If there's one guy you need to re-sign, I think it's that guy. So, yeah, I agree with you completely on Lawrence.
Okay, and I just want to throw this in here because we mentioned it before. I mean, I think number one, obviously, you know, upgrading the weapons for the Patriots, and I just want to give the people some of the stats here. This is via Mike Giardi, NFL Network. Patriots wide receivers last year, receiving yards, 30th out of 32 teams. Touchdown receptions, 4. That was dead last in the NFL. Patriots tight ends, touchdown receptions, tied for last in the NFL. Receiving yards, 31st out of 32 teams. So you see sort of what dire need they are in of upgrades. And as the fireworks start here in free agency, as I mentioned, you know, we sort of go way back. Jim, how long have you worked at the Globe now? Is it 30 years?
Yeah, I started as a co-op student on January 1st, 1988.
Wow. So it's more than 30 years. Well, I was fortunate enough to be a Nighthawk, an editorial assistant in sports, and I sort of came up that way and spent 20 years there. And so, like I said, as long as I was there, you know, Jim was always there, and he was an excellent, excellent copy editor who saved me many times, including, I'll give you the Super Bowl 42 payoff. I filed a Super Bowl 42 running game story that did not have the David Tyree catch in it, and somebody added it because I never saw that catch because I was writing two versions of the story live for the running. One was they win, one was they lose, and I still actually have my winning top somewhere on my computer, Jim. But I filed a version of the story that didn't really have the Tyree catching it, and somebody added it. So that, and that wasn't me. And I've always said this about copy editors. I feel like they are like the offensive linemen of journalism. If they're not, I don't care how good you are, like you could be the Tom Brady of sports writers. If you don't have a good offensive line, i.e. copywriters, you're going to look like an idiot. So what has it been like going from sort of the offensive line to being like, you know, in a more prominent position?
Yeah, it's been strange. It's been a lot of fun. It's been nice to finally, you know, kind of be in your shoes. I think as a copy editor, I didn't realize how difficult it was for you guys all the time in the field to be constantly, you know, under pressure. And I think about like at the beginning of a game when there's really nothing to do but start to watch the game and you're trying to keep notes, and then all of a sudden everything speeds up and you're like, this game's on top of me. I got to get this story in. And, you know, I'm sure the guys on the copy desk, because I've been in that position, they're like, where's this copy?
Yeah.
Name's on in front of me. You know, what's Gasper doing? You know,
especially me, because I'm a notoriously slow writer. Probably the two slowest writers in the history of the globe would be me and Michael Hawley.
Fortunately for me, I know what it's like on both sides. I try to keep them in mind when I'm writing. Like, if they want something at 11 o'clock, I'm giving them something at 10:58. It's been a great transition. I'm glad that it was later on in my life that I got to do it, because I really appreciate that.
Well, I don't know if there's a lot of people who can do it. Normally it goes the other way. You know, you start out, you know, beat writer, reporter first, then go to the copy desk like our esteemed friend Michael Vega. I don't know how many people could make the transition you made after, I don't know, what was it? Jeez, 30 plus years on the copy desk, and then now you're a beat writer, but it's been seamless. You've done a wonderful job. I was once a Patriots beat writer. You're doing a much better job than I ever did. I know how tough.
I wouldn't go that far.
I would. And you're doing a much, you know, better job than I ever did. And really have established yourself as one of the go-to people on the beat. So, Jim, thanks for taking the time. I know it's a busy day with free agency. Always great to catch up with you, my friend.
Thanks for having me, Chris. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it, as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.